This podcast is supported by Talkspace.
When my husband came home from his military deployment, readjusting was hard for all of us. Thankfully, I found Talkspace.
Talkspace provides professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatric providers online. Military members, veterans, and their dependents ages 13 and older can get fast access to providers, all from the privacy of their computers or smartphones.
I just answered a few questions online, and Talkspace matched me with a therapist. We meet when it's convenient for me, and I can message her anytime. It was so easy to set up, and they accept TRICARE. Therapy was going so well, my husband and I started seeing a couples therapist through Talkspace, too.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, including TRICARE. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com/military. Go to Talkspace.com/military to get started today. That's Talkspace.com/military.
Popular. I'll show you what shoes to wear, how to fix your hair,
everything that really counts.
What am I going to do? What am I going to do this? This is crazy. This is nuts.
What's wrong?
What is my life? I don't know. Just talking.
You're just playing. But you're about to leave town. You don't have to plan anything.
I know.
When are you coming back? Oh, you don't have a return flight?
I don't have a return flight.
That is weird.
What do I do?
Well, I think you should come back before we're back because you'll be so happy to have some alone time in this big house.
I don't know. I am so excited to be with them for a full week in the same place.
Yeah.
I'm so excited.
Well, that'll be great.
Do you have any plans when you go to Hawaii or no?
No.
By the way, if anybody here is listening from New York City and you know of any apartment that is available in January, February, like, let a girl know. The other thing I want to tell you about is I had a friend who reached out and said, hey, this person is looking... This person is looking for an apartment and I need you to see it. Hold on. And this is the first picture.
Oh my. I think that was made for you.
It's a stripper pole.
Yeah. I mean, how much fun would that be to have that in your living room?
That's crazy. That's like, that's a good so crazy. Equipment. The only thing that said is it's in Midtown East Manhattan.
You don't want to live in Midtown?
No, I don't want to. And it's a sublet. I don't know if I want that life.
You don't want that.
It feels so stressful to me to, like, not know what neighborhood. I really want that rent-controlled apartment in Carroll Gardens.
Yeah, of course you do. It's a great neighborhood and it's rent-controlled.
That's what we want.
But is that a real thing?
They are just going through the eviction process with someone, which I don't love feeling hopeful for someone else's eviction. I don't think that's a good thing to feel, but here we are. But here we are. I think this person, from what I understand, is they are not well and they need some more assistance. Mm-hmm. Can I show you this video? I need to show you. I asked Griffin, I sent you that video. Did you watch it yet?
No.
Can you watch it right now?
Mm-hmm.
I'm asking him to do the face of a gnome. Wait.
His little... Oh, he's so cute. He's really cute. Like, I really like that guy.
When Griffin loves you, nothing feels better. And it's the... He did like a... It was the slightest. I asked him to do a gnome, and he just did this, like, little
it's
tiny
like the
smile.
Tiniest smiles. The tiniest smile you've ever seen.
And he sits there in
so
it.
So slight, and he just
and
sits
doesn't
frozen.
Move. He's totally going to come in and be like, God. Are you talking about me?
Can we?
Yeah, girl.
Can we? Did you call me?
Can we? And that's the best was this morning I woke up because they were running, and Matt was so sweet. He was like, Griff, like, Aunt Carrie's still asleep. He didn't know. I heard. But the best was this. He was like, I did not yell.
He's screaming that? Yeah. I did not yell. Yeah.
How, I really like
I
it.
I think, do you think I that the fire them. Under your ass to get an apartment is a little bit because no. you have little people screaming at all times of the
No, I'm actually
morning?
Genuinely having a great time with them. I've had a great 2 weeks here. I hope I've been an okay guest. They've been so great. They've been so amazing. I love them.
You know
they're
that you're
really
always
fun.
Welcome here and that
I love you for
you
that. Thank you.
Absolutely shouldn't feel like you need to stay in Florida or that you need to jump into an apartment. Like, be calm. It's
I am calm.
Happen.
I do feel that. I do feel
things
that. I do
in
feel
the right order at the right time.
Yeah, I actually do feel that more okay. than I think I felt it before. Mm-hmm. I think it's you guys also I have to give a little teaser. You guys, this story of my stolen money, I think I need to just tell you this. I can't tell you Can what's you? Happening fully.
Oh,
but here's the deal. The story has gotten
it's
fucking
out of proportion.
Bananas.
It's way crazier than you're picturing.
It's way crazier than you're picturing. Although my cousin texted me and she was like, I think such and such. And she was right. And I'm sure some of you also thought things and you might, the things that you think
for instance,
that
me,
you thought,
the thing
for
I
instance,
thought.
Quinn, the thing that you thought, everyone's correct. Everyone's correct. And also it is the tip of the fucking iceberg. And I cannot wait to tell you all. I'm wondering if it's a full ep. I'm wondering if it's a full episode.
It's a Patreon.
No, that would be so cruel. Yeah. Should we do a Patreon AMA after it? Okay. What do you want to talk about?
Here's what I want to talk about. Okay. Here's what I want. Then I'm gonna... Actually, this is a good story. So I took the kids to this very cool thing on last weekend where sometimes we go to these Christmas festivals and they're fucking terrible. They're like, they over-advertise, mm-hmm. they underserve. You show up and there's like very watery hot cocoa that has a line 50 people deep and like tables where they're like, it's crafts and it's just like coloring book pages and broken crayons. And it's very sad because you like take a train there for a Christmas festival and you're like, oh, New York, what are you doing to me? And you want to leave as soon as you walk in. Well, we went to one that we thought might be like that this last weekend, and then it ended up being the coolest thing ever. You walk in.
Dude, it's
no
expectations.
Line.
Yeah.
It's huge. It was like a huge gallery and then a huge amphitheater, and there were tables everywhere, and you could do beading. You could do printmaking with your kids. You could do it for free on paper or give them $5, and they'd give you a tote. You could do...
Did you do that? Did you get
collages.
A tote?
You could do, no, but we did a bunch of stuff. We went and sat and watched a demo of glass blowing in a giant gallery where they were blowing glass and watching and explaining what they were going to make with like a microphone and showing us and then being like, do you see how it's turning this color? Like we got to watch glass blowing with the kids with little, they had little kid sized protective goggles. So like our kids are in little protective goggles and we were in... grown up, but it was like everyone had these cool goggles on.
Wait, that's so cool.
It was insane. We went to an area where they were making glass beads, like with heat and coloring them. We went to, there was a scavenger hunt in the building for kids. And when you turned it in, you got to spin a prize wheel. There was a quiet room. If you have kids that are neurodivergent and need to take a break in the quiet room,
oh my
had
God.
Silent games and like, weighted blankets and all kinds of like tactile things to take a break. It was,
this sounds beautiful.
It was like, oh, and then when you walk in, you get handed a ticket to go get your free churro and hot cocoa. And they were both sensational. And for $6, you could add a shot of Fort Hamilton bourbon or rye to your hot chocolate. And I was like, my kids like rye. I like bourbon. This is perfect.
By the way, sidebar, Quinn and I went to see the Christmas lights together and I got like a hot chocolate for the fam. And then Quinn was like, we brought a hot toddy. And I was like, that sounds lovely. So like kids, we're drinking the hot chocolate. It's amazing. Coet straight to the face. It was so cute to see that kid just drink as much hot chocolate as he could get his hands on. But he was so good at sharing. He was amazing. Anyway, Matt's like, would you like some hot toddy? Or Quinn, I think, goes, Matt, get Carrie some hot toddy. Both of you were like, let's get Carrie hot toddy.
Let's
so nice. I'm telling you, like I she did. She, like, I went and inhaled it. I inhaled it and I was like, ugh. Like it was mustard gassy. Like I don't know how else to describe it. It was so wildly strong. And Quinn
warm?
Was like,
how are you going to stay warm?
Quinn.
It's the holidays. How are you going to stay warm?
The amount. So anyway, did you choose bourbon or rye on the hot chocolate?
I did bourbon.
That feels like the better option.
Matt and I shared one. And then they said, well, we're part of the reason we're doing this is to make people aware that we exist. We offer all these kinds of cool classes, you know, fire blowing classes, printmaking, all these different
fireball shot experience.
Mixology. No,
for
there
kids.
It was like a ton of classes for kids and adults that were in the arts. And then they're like, oh, and there's this whole floor that is about audio and video engineering stuff if you want to take a tour. And we're like, yes, we do. So we went and took a tour. They have a podcast studio. They have two television studios that are like green screen and enormous with giant, you know, the cameras that are like bigger than me, where you have to hold the two things like to spin them. They have editing studios. They have tons of audiovisual equipment. And they explained it to me. They're like, so we have all these classes you can take. And if you take a class in one of these things, let's say you take the class that is in the TV studio equipment and you take that class, the class will meet two times or four times or whatever. Once you're done and you've completed the class, you then can rent anything you – oh, I'm sorry, not rent. You then can borrow the studio anytime you want. And when I say borrow, I mean it will be $0. And you just say, I want to use the studio for half of a day. And you write to them and they're like, great, you took the class? And you're like, yeah, I know how to use the equipment. And they're like, then you can. Ditto the equipment that you would bring outside. Ditto the podcast studio. Ditto everything on that floor is free to use. All the editing software, every single thing. And so I was like, the classes must be prohibitively expensive. It'll cost like $75 to take the class total for like a class that meets six times, or $50.
What
to
is
take
the
a
collateral
class.
Of taking these like cameras out? What the?
None.
That's insane.
And so I was so confused by the money. And they were like, okay, well, here's the deal. We're not for profit and we have four public access channels. We are providing a service. As long as we can provide the service, we get the funding to do this. So we don't need to make a bunch of money off of it because we're getting the funding.
It makes me
want
to go.
We provide the service. So they said the collateral is if you want to rent their equipment, or I'm sorry, borrow. I keep saying rent, but you don't have to pay them. If you want to borrow their equipment or borrow the studio, all they ask is that you make something they can use for the public access channel. They're basically like, we want something you make to put on the public access channel.
Whoa. I feel like I should do like a photo editing class or something there.
Well, so I signed Matt up for the field class, because if he takes the field class, he can use their – he can take out cameras. He can take out sound equipment for free. He can borrow it and leave the studio with it to shoot something. And so I signed him up for January for a class. It meets like four times, $75.
Wait, so it's $75 for four classes?
Four classes. Four three-hour classes. Four three-hour classes. And when he's done, he then can, anytime he wants, tell them, I'd like to borrow a camera today. Sure, here. Oh, crazy.
Quinn, it makes me... What's it called?
Brick.
Oh, Brick. Yes. That's incredible.
Unreal.
That's amazing.
Unreal. I mean, my jaw was on the floor.
New York is obviously, it's an expensive place. We were just talking to some friends who went to a party last night where a glass of wine,
$30.
$30.
I don't buy a 30 bottle ever. That's like fancy. That's like Thanksgiving.
That's not Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving, you get one nice bottle to start with and then you go shitty. There is no fucking way. $30 for a glass. Did you hear how Adam got swindled? Oh, I'll tell you. Okay. So Adam, who is a gift to the god wines, he is Bacchus himself, went to the party. He has a wine shop.
Adam's going to like
that. I'll say it.
I think
he's going to like it. We're going to keep it in. Which, by the way, when I went through a breakup, I have to give a shout out because they told me we cut it. And I do need to say, when I went through my breakup a couple months ago and I came back here very, 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 very sad before we recorded, this was a couple months ago, I came in and the boys were all downstairs and they waved me in. And I have to tell you, this like group of gay men just gave me the most beautiful, loving welcome, hug, ear, snuggle. I just loved it. I love them. I loved it. It was amazing. So I just have to give them a shout out. Okay. So Adam went to the bar and he was like trying to figure out how to, not figure out, but he was like, listen, how much is this? He's like, what if I take a $20 bill and I'll tip you? And the bartender was like, yeah, yeah, yeah. So he got that $30 bottle of wine by just putting 20 bucks. And he was like, sick. So he gets one glass and then he goes back and he was getting a glass of wine for him and a friend. And he's like, all right. So he goes for two Sancerres and he takes $40 and he puts it in the tip jar. Mm-hmm. He takes the wine, leaves. The bartender goes, excuse me, sir, I need your credit card. He then charged him $30 a glass. So he spent $50.
No. Oh, God. Oh, my God.
I'm laughing because it's the most offensive thing I've heard ever. Like, I can't. So I think he thought he had a deal with the bartender. And he's like, I'll just pay the bartender $20. You can pour me. Maybe his boss was behind him. I don't know what happened. But Adam got fucking got. Like, he got scammed. And he said, I am never going to the island of Manhattan again.
Well, their cab driver got lost and was going around in circles and they had to like help him drive them there. And it took like hours and hundreds of dollars. I mean, they had a really
wacky
night.
Let it be a lesson.
You guys got
to
hear this.
Don't leave home.
Then they went to go home and it was another like $100. Then they get home and Spencer just wants some junk food. So he orders like a variety.
$58 worth from GoPuff. I'll call them out. Like, and he named it. It was like Smart Food Popcorn, which feels very healthy in my mind. But it's like, it was like a Snickers ice cream bar, Oreo ice cream cookie, like everything. Like literally it was like, well, I'm a little stoned. Let's fucking go for it. They say it's delivered. Guess what? No, it was not.
No, it was not. The guy saw what a good order Spencer made that was driving it to the house and clearly just was like, eh, I'd rather lose
my job.
I'm
going to hotbox my car. Yeah, there was some Haribo there. And guess who did not get the Haribo? Spen. It was rough. I felt really, my heart was breaking for him. Yeah. That was tough. That was really tough.
It is true that when that many things go wrong in quick succession, it does become funny. Like that is the blessing. Is like one thing going wrong is a tragedy, but 10 things going wrong is noises off. And you're like, okay, it actually turned into a comedy. Like, it's
1,000%.
Suddenly, it's 1,000%. Suddenly actually hilarious. Don't buy a lottery ticket.
Don't buy, or do, and then you will win. We should, by the way, you're listening to Truly.
Darkly.
Creepily.
I'm Quinlan Posner.
And I'm Carrie Ipama.
And I'm going to tell a story, right?
You got to tell a story. Yeah, you go first.
My story is from Seattle Times, All That's Interesting, thesun.com, and, oh, shoot. I wonder what that show was. Oh, Diabolical. I watched an episode of Diabolical. Have you seen that show?
Is it on Netflix?
No, I think I got it off Amazon. It was great. Is this story about Randy Roth? Randy Roth, he always liked his dad more than his mom growing up, and then he cuts his mom out of his life completely, so we know he's going to go somewhere bad, right?
Because was his mom nice?
I think so. I think she was normal, but dad was really abusive and strict.
Wait, that's every person's fear. That is like every parent's fear.
And
what
and
you just said
like
right there.
Very, very, what do you call it? Poisonous masculine, toxic masculinity.
Yeah. Thank you for not knowing that. That's so chic that you didn't know the words for that for a minute.
Don't show emotions.
Oh, no.
Yeah, you kind of screwed the guy up. And we know a lot of this because in these interviews, his ex-girlfriend, Terry, is coming into the picture being like, well, Randy and I met when we were teens. He was super hot. We were on again, off again. he started his junior year, and then I'm hearing people talk about what a bully he is, and it's not lining up with what a gentleman he is to me. And they're like, no, this guy, if you piss him off, he'll go to the parking lot and find your car and fuck it up. And she's like, huh, it's just not what I'm experiencing. In 1973, he graduates and joins the Marines, and he's writing to Terry at the time. And he's like, oh, man, I'm very important here. They have me doing tons of top secret missions. It's pretty dangerous. And he's actually a file clerk, like it turns out, which I think he ends up admitting to her. He's like, I got to get out. And she's like, why? You're so important there. And he's like, nah, I'm just a file clerk. I just told you that. It's really boring, actually. He gets his mom to help him get a hardship discharge. And he comes home and he proposes to Terry, but he's cheating on her, and they break up. And then he low-key stalks her and like breaks into her apartment at some point and trashes it. So Terry's like, here's my experience with this guy, just so y'all know. And after he leaves Terry, he's dating a single mom named Donna Cliff, and he proposes to her on Valentine's Day of 1985. No, he proposes on Valentine's Day, and they get married in May of 85. And he's like, Donna, should we get life insurance? She's like,
no, Donna.
Donna's like, no. And he's like, oh, all right. Okay.
That's so, not what you were supposed to say, Donna.
He takes out a policy on her anyway for like 20G. He starts to totally disengage from her. Like, as soon as he gets the policy, he's a different person to her. He does not give a shit about her. And then he's like, you know what? I really do want us to figure this out. Like, obviously our marriage is breaking up. It's really hard. We've got to just go do something, just the two of us. Let's go rafting. And they go rafting, and he proceeds to like start steering the raft towards rocks. Like, he's being super reckless, very, very reckless. And she's like, this guy's trying to burst the raft and kill me. And as soon as she can, she gets the fuck off the raft. And she's like, I never want to talk to you again. She calls her mom and she's like, Randy just took me rafting. I think he was trying to fucking kill me. And she files for divorce. That's Donna's story. Knowing all these stories, let's move forward to July of 1992. 1992, the police get a call that there's been a drowning on Lake Sammamish. I got to be saying that wrong.
Sure. It's Sammamish. They'll forgive you.
The detective that takes the call, Sue Peters, is listening very intently to the call because she's like, okay, explain what happened. Oh, the woman was a competitive swimmer and she drowned. Okay. What's her deal? And they're like, she's 34 years old. Her name is Cynthia Baumgartner Roth. Her husband, Randy Roth, was there. And what had happened was they went out on a raft. A boat went by and the wake, the boat tipped the raft. She got exhausted and had a leg cramp and couldn't get back in and drowned. And we got there. They tried to revive her. She was pronounced dead. So let's talk about Cynthia Baumgartner. She was a single mother of two when she met Randy Roth. Her husband had died, and he courted her. He got her to sign a life insurance policy of $350,000.
That's like not even a lot of money. That's not even enough money to like live a fucking... That's so insane. Sorry, right. I'm already raging.
So he, as soon as she signed it, changed his behavior, became very controlling. He started hitting on a woman he worked with that comes forward later. Her name's Stacy, and she's like, it was weird. He was married, but he was hitting on me. And he told me that he had a dead wife, but he didn't seem to care. And that the new woman he was with, Cynthia, they had only been together a year and they were going to break up. And I just got a weird feeling because he told me this. He had cold, dead eyes. I'm thinking, what a weirdo. The next day, he turns to Cynthia and he's like, we got to get our marriage back in order. Let's go to this beach. Bring the kids. They go to this lake beach. And that is the day that she drowned. At Lake Sammamish. Shamamanash. Shamalama. Manamana. Do not know. Shamalama ding dong. It was really crowded at the lake that day, and her kids are there. There's a bunch of people around, and when Randy paddles ashore, they say that he, like, paddles really calmly up to the shore, and he's like, hey, to the lifeguards. He's like, my wife, I don't know, non-responsive. Like, super calm. While they're performing CPR on her, he deflates and rolls up the raft and then starts drawing on the sand with sticks. And they don't realize it's him by how he's acting. So one of the paramedics was like, sir, you need to step back. And he's like, it's my wife. But they're like, this guy's doodling on the sand. What? Him, that's his wife?
That's so insane. And he gets what an custody idiot.
Of her kids. And he's no. like, I want to have her cremated. How fast can you do it? How fast can I get my life insurance money? He's like trying to get it right away. His story about them going out on the raft and getting flipped is pretty weird. Like, why did it take them so long to row back? Nobody saw a boat speed by. No one saw a raft flip. Again, it was a really busy day. The ex-girlfriend, Terry, is the one that I told you about from the beginning. She calls the police and is like, you guys, I just heard about this Cynthia Baumgarten's death. Do you know who Randy Roth is? Do you know this guy? Because I do. And they're like, what are you talking about? And she's like, I think he killed her. Do you know that his wife before this also died? And they're like, really? So what's her deal? Janice Miranda had married Randy Roth in March of 1981. So that was before he was with Donna Cliff. Remember, Donna got away? Mm-hmm. Donna went rafting with him and got away. Well, before Donna, there was Janice Miranda.
Wait, I thought you said Terry.
Okay, let me break down the characters. Terry's the high school girlfriend, breaks up with him, and he trashes her house. And she's like, I think I dodged a bullet.
Yes.
Donna is a single mom
rafting, almost tried to kill.
Tries to kill on a raft. And then we've got Cynthia,
who died previously.
Who drowned.
Yes.
And now we're going back in time to right after Terry, before he went rafting, before he went on to the lake. He was married to Janice Miranda. They're both divorced, and he's like, I'm just like you. I have a son of my own. I don't want to do it by myself. We should get married. And as soon as they do, his personality changes. She seems really unhappy. And he makes her sign for a large life insurance policy. And it's the same pattern. It's the exact same pattern I just said. He changes. And then he's like, God, it is hard. What's going on? We're going to have to find a way to rekindle our love in nature. So he takes her hiking at Beacon Rock, and a bunch of hikers see him looking around at some point saying, my wife fell, I'm looking for her. And his story is that they were on this hike and took a shortcut, and that she somehow fell off a ledge. So she's 29. They find her dead. They tell Randy, but I guess this time he did a better job acting. He, like, really acted upset instead of doodling. But they still are looking at it because they're like, it's not really making a ton of sense. Like, where he said she fell doesn't really line up with where we found her. His story keeps changing. Sometimes he says she was taking a picture. We never recovered a camera. Sometimes she fell alone and he didn't know she fell because the hikers were saying he was looking. Sometimes he clearly witnessed her falling. Either way, he's like, we got to get cremated fast. And next day, asking for that life insurance money, does not tell her family that she has died. Doesn't tell them.
God damn it.
He doesn't even tell her daughter for a week. And she's a little girl. And then the little girl is like, knew that like her mom had hid money for her. And like, he catches her getting the money out. And he's like, what's that? And she's like, it's money that mom left me. And he's like, I'll handle that. And like, takes it from her. And she never sees it again.
Oh my God.
So the sheriffs didn't like what they saw.
It's very suspicious, but they can't prove anything. So now flash forward to him killing another person, essentially. And he has a press conference and he's like, I'm really sad. The media has been really negative about all this, but he seems cold as fuck. And he knows they only have circumstantial evidence, so I think he's a little cocky. So they have to try to prove that he killed one of these women. So they're like, all right, let's take a raft out and do the thing he said happened to Cynthia. Let's try to get the wake of a boat to tip us. And they can't. Like, they can't get anywhere close to this happening in reality. They cannot capsize a raft. But that's not good enough. So they start to look at Janice and at that original hiking death. And in October of 1991, they do have enough probable cause to do an arrest. And when they get the arrest, they have, you know, all these warrants to look through stuff, and they get a letter that Cynthia had in a drawer. And it's just this, like, it's her writing down a list of everything Randy hates about her. And it says things like, Randy hates Cindy's cold hands. Randy hates Cindy's blush. Randy hates Cindy's pink feminine things. Randy hates Cindy's blonde hair. Randy hates Cindy's ugly toes. Like, she's just clearly had like a mental break almost. This person has been so abusive. So not just a killer, I want to be clear, but completely abusive.
Oh my God.
So what they think happened is that he went out and got her off the raft somehow and wouldn't let her back in, like kept, you know, we should get in for a swim. And then every time she tried to get back in, wouldn't let her back in until she got tired enough that he could just drown her easily. And that's what they think. And he definitely would have murdered again because he just, like, this was his way. He was just meeting single women that he could prey on, single mothers a lot of the time, single and just mothers. Trying to murder them. I mean, it is
just
wild.
Just the children. Jesus Christ.
He was sentenced to 55 years. And just because we started talking about this childhood and how they, like, left behind their mom, he and his brother were raised by the dad. His brother is named David Roth. And at some point, a woman was hitchhiking near the Boeing company's Everett plant, and he saw this woman. Her name is Elizabeth Ann Roberts. He picked her up. They went and got beer and went to go drink it in the woods, and he tries to rape her, and she stops him, and he strangles her with a cord and gets out a gun from his car and shoots her. And that's his brother did that. Nature and nurture, we don't know. But I got to tell you, I thought it was, like, very spooky because you can read a bunch about Randy Roth and then eventually you find out that his brother committed a murder as well. And that this was before Randy was found out. So Randy was always like, my brother the murderer. And meanwhile, he's like, definitely.
He's just like a smarter murderer. Yeah, way more premeditated. And to people he knows. Yes. Like, all of it's bad. All of it's bad.
To people he told he loved them.
To people he married.
To people who he knows they have children. He knows the children.
And he knows their family.
Yeah. I mean, it is the saddest, scariest thing. It is diabolical, which is maybe why it was chosen to be on that show. Isn't that scary? Wow.
That's disgusting. That's so scary. And that's so dark. And I don't like that.
It is dark-sided. I really, ugh. The like kid part really killed me. And when they're doing the show, they're reenacting. So you have a visual that, you know, it's not the real visual, but it doesn't matter. It's like watching the guy walk in and find like this little girl going through money and be like, what is that? And taking it from her and being like, you took her mom. You're taking her cash. Like, how can you... A child.
How can you live,
like,
with yourself? Evil people be the worst. I think what's also crazy is that, like, he brought this woman, Cynthia, like, her kids were on that beach, and he killed her and then, like, brought her body and her kids. How scary must have that felt when their mom comes and everybody's performing CPR? Like, that is a CPR is a terrifying thing to watch. It is not.
These children watch their mom die on the beach, and this guy's like doodling. I mean, I can't put it together.
Do you remember? Was it last year? I think it was last year. There was a football game, or maybe it was a year and a half ago. I think it was 2 years ago, a year ago or 2 years ago. But there was a a football player. I probably talked about it on the podcast, but there was a football player that collapsed. His name was David Hester, I think. And I think he played for the Bills, the Buffalo Bills. Devin Hester. Anyway, he was a player and he just collapsed. And essentially he went into cardiac arrest. And this was a live football game. And they ended up like stopping the game, which doesn't ever happen. But like what happened, but essentially this grown man collapses. The medical team descends upon him and they start doing compressions. And they didn't show it, but the like seeing a man go limp and then the players all surround him because they don't want the cameras to do it. It's like what they do in football. They surround the body and stand there so that no one can see what's happening. Mm-hmm. But you see these like grown men crying because mm-hmm. they see their teammate who is unconscious, yeah. who is getting CPR. CPR is an incredibly traumatic thing to witness. And it is a very physically exerting thing to keep a body alive. And I like that stayed with me of like seeing that trauma on TV in real time. I just like that was a horrible and that was a person I don't know. That was a person like these are this guy and he's yes, just fucking doodling. Like it's so fuck that's
there's
so cruel.
Completely non-human about this. Like it yes, does diabolical. Feel like it defies humanity. Like there's something built into all our systems to feel a feeling when something like that's happening, like you said, even if it's a stranger. And I understand there's like so many other things at play because there's got to be some kind of broken brain mental illness thing happening for him to a do it, but then to witness mm-hmm. it and be completely unmoved. Like
compartmentalization
is inhuman.
I think I saw a banner somewhere, a clickbait that was like, people who cry at movies are emotionally intelligent. And I read that and I memorized it because I felt like it was, yeah. Because I was like, well, I guess I'm a fucking genius.
You and Matt.
I guess I'm an
you
emotional,
and Matt, my
me and Matt
crybabies.
Are emotional.
Crybabies. You,
and
Matt,
not even the kids.
Koa, Griff. Me and four crybabies.
Truly,
that should be my television
truly,
show.
Matt, I got to tell you, Matt the other day showed me a text and he was crying while he was trying to read it. And it was the email that Bronwyn sent him about you.
Yeah.
And Matt was reading it to me out loud and he's like, you got to finish the last line. He couldn't. It was so sweet. It was so sweet.
I do love
we
that
love
about him.
Him a lot. He loves you. So, it's so beautiful.
Yeah.
But the I was going to say I was watching while on the road with Wheel of Fortune. It was the Jake Paul versus Mike Tyson boxing thing, mm-hmm. boxing thing, the match, boxing match, boxing ring match. Anyway, while I was watching it, it was so hard. This is why I can't watch boxing. I can't watch it because I get too emotionally invested. And I had to start reminding myself that both of those people are bad. Like Jake Paul, I didn't want to win because I know he's like the worst, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. I think he's the worst. And he's like beating up a 60 or a 58-year-old man. Like that just feels bad. Yeah, but then I like felt like I was seeing this 58-year-old man who was like a champion in his own right, like losing steam and not doing well. And I was feeling really bad for him. Like I was like, oh, no, I'm rooting for Mike Tyson. And then I had to be like, oh, Mike Tyson has been in jail for raping someone. Like I had to like actively mm-hmm. tell myself bad things that Mike Tyson did so that I could feel less empathy. Like it was really hard. It was
not
really
the right sport for you.
I was watching it because everybody else was, and I just love being with people.
Yeah.
Like, I want to be a part of the group.
Yeah.
And I was watching it, and I was like, oh, who am I rooting for? Like, you can't not root for someone. And then I was not, and it was really hard to figure out who to root for.
Yeah, I don't think I could root.
No, I wasn't the rootinest tootinest cowgirl in that Wild Wild West. Okay. It is time for my story. I want to tell you the story that I found from the following things: New York Post, AP, WQAD, USA Today, KWQC, WFLA, Law and Crime, WSFA, and
These
ABC.
Too many letters.
WISN.
Nope, too many letters. Enough.
I think they're all like ABC, NBC affiliates. I just want to say that's what they were, but I just really like the idea of being like KW, QC.
RL, XYZ.
XYZ, let's buy a VOWEL. Okay, so I want to introduce you to 18-year-old student Maddie Russo. She is a TikToker. This is happening in like 2022. So TikTok is huge. I don't know about you. I don't have a TikTok. I actually do know about you, Quinn. You don't have a TikTok. TikTok scares the shit out of me. So she's a TikToker based in Iowa, and she's of the generation under us. And so just like different vibes. People are sharing their lives. People mm-hmm. are going hard. It is February 2022, and she goes to the doctor, and unfortunately, she is diagnosed with stage 2 pancreatic cancer and acute lymphoblastic leukemia. Now, I don't love lymphoblastic leukemia, but there is a fun word in there, which is lymphoblastic, mm-hmm. which sounds mm-hmm. just like a party.
Probably the only but high this is of a very low low.
Of a very low low. Now, pancreatic cancer is very scary. I know someone who has fought. I know someone who is fighting, and he's doing a fucking amazing job. He got diagnosed over 3 years ago, and he is still fighting pancreatic cancer. It's amazing. But it's a very, very, very scary illness because often it is detected so late that it usually is stage 4 right off
My
the bat.
My mentor died of pancreatic cancer.
The one Paul from Rudd. The guy, not Paul Rudd.
Yeah, his name's Paul Rudd. He gave Paul Rudd his name, actually, when Paul Rudd went into the business. So he became Paul Ryan Rudd, but he was the original Paul Rudd. And then Paul Rudd,
really?
People called him and were like, can he be Paul Rudd? And he was like, yeah, I'm not really acting anymore. I'm raising my kids. He can be Paul Rudd. I'll be Paul Ryan
Wait,
Rudd.
Is he the dad from Friends?
No, that's Ron Liebman. That's my teacher. But like my mentor like was my teacher at Sarah Lawrence for 4 years, and I studied Shakespeare under him. And then he was my mentor because like when I graduated, I would like meet with him, have coffee with him, ask him advice. And he was like, I think you should come to the other school I teach at. And that's why I got my master's at the new school, was then I was like,
really?
Okay, I'll just do whatever you're doing. And then I went to the new school, like followed him to that school and studied under him. And then he got pancreatic cancer and he died. And he
How
was
fast
amazing
after did he...
man. Fast.
Fast.
Yeah.
It's a very scary, very scary, very aggressive cancer. And they still don't know how to do early detection. It's just, it's really fucking scary. Some notable people who have died from pancreatic cancer, Patrick Swayze, Alex Trebek, like two icons. Mm-hmm. So she's 18 years old and she gets this diagnosis, and this is a quote from her. She says, I remember hanging up the phone and I was a mess. I was literally bawling, but somehow I ended up getting the courage to wipe away my tears and I went back into class, which now when I think about it was pretty crazy. Her doctor gives her an 11% survival rate for 5 years. And so she's fighting. She's going through like crazy, like 19 rounds of chemo, 90 rounds of radiation just between February and October. And then they discover that she has a tumor the size of a football wrapped around her spine. And so she's like dealing with this, like starting school. She's still in school. She's at St. Ambrose University. She's maintaining a GPA of 4.0. And she's like going to school, she's getting treatment, and she's posting about her life. She's taking pictures of her with a feeding tube in and, you know, her bag. She has IV stands, all this stuff. She says, life has been crazy. It's like a catch-22. I can't win for losing. I feel like I've been rocked to my soul, and right now everything is kind of uncertain. I just want to know my game plan. And right now I don't know what that is. So she's documenting her battle. She's like doing what people do, which is like put it out on TikTok and like get support. And because unfortunately we live in the damn United States of America, I'm sure you know what happens. What comes next in the US is a GoFundMe account for the other costs associated with cancer, right? It's not just, sure, like you can get some medication paid for, but that doesn't account for time off or work or driving or all of this stuff. And so the GoFundMe says, as one can imagine, the diagnosis has been very hard on Maddie's family. Just like any cancer diagnosis, the cost of medical bills, gas, meals, and expenses can be a burden. And that is something this family should not have to worry about. If you are able to, donations would be greatly appreciated to help cover medical expenses and to allow Maddie to focus on one thing only, which is to show that she is stronger than cancer and will beat this. Please donate, share if you can. She ends up raising like $37,000 from more than 439 donors. People are following her story. They feel impassioned and emboldened to help out where they can. She goes public and she talks about her cancer diagnosis at her school at St. Ambrose University. She continues to attend classes, again, like I said, 4.0. And then also she has a part-time job at John Deere and she also likes to golf. So she's trying to like keep a normal life. She speaks at the National Pancreatic Foundation. She also is a guest on the Project Purple podcast, which is Project Purple. Purple is the ribbon for pancreatic cancer. And so oftentimes like the pink ribbon, obviously, as we know, is breast cancer. Purple is for pancreatic cancer. And nobody likes to see a purple ribbon. It's just not what people want. And so Project Purple is trying to increase funding, increase research. Their goal is how can we do early detection and stuff like that. So it's January 11th, 2023. It's about a year after her diagnosis. And she's been like through the ringer medically. She's sharing all these pictures. And there's an anonymous witness that contacts the police and they claim to be medical professionals and they reach out to authorities and they say, we're noticing some discrepancies about her medical treatment and her social media posts. And they're looking at these pictures of her with like, feeding tubes and things like adhered to her body. And they're like, there's something about these pictures that aren't right. In fact, some of like where she's placing these things are like life-threatening inaccuracies of where the equipment is on her body. And there's enough evidence that the police start looking into this. Now, keep in mind, she's now raised over $37,000 for her treatment. They start to look into it and they get a warrant to her apartment and they find a brown paper bag that's filled with medical supplies, an IV pole with a feeding pump filled with cotton swabs, some wigs, pills for nausea in a relative's name. And that's also super weird. So they're able to subpoena her medical records and they find the medical records from the doctor she goes to. And none of them say that she has been diagnosed with a cancer. None of them say she has a tumor. None of them say she has pancreatic cancer. This call was made January 11th, 2023. By January 23rd, she is arrested and her story falls apart. A lot of the photos of just bodies on her social media were taken from other cancer patients that she is passing off as her own. And she's using them on her page. Right after she's released on bond, on a $10,000 bond, they don't think she's a flight risk. Even her speaking at the National Pancreatic Foundation was a lie. She still was on the podcast and she did speak at her school. But she says it wasn't about the money that made her lie. It was that her family was, I think she grew up in a home that I don't think had a stable family and she wanted attention and she wanted to keep her family together is what she said. And a quote from her is, a lot of people have made speculation as to why I did this and how somebody who looked like they had everything together could have been such a mess. I didn't do this for money or greed. I didn't do this for attention. I did this as an attempt to get my family back together. At her trial, she pleads guilty to first-degree theft. The prosecution recommends against prison time. They don't think she is likely to reoffend. However, at sentencing, there are two people, including who testify with victim impact statements. And one of these women is this woman, Peggy, and she is a woman who donated directly to the GoFundMe. And she testifies and she talks about how she herself lost her husband to pancreatic cancer and how the idea that the prosecution isn't pursuing jail time for her is so offensive to her because it's like this woman made herself the face of pancreatic cancer. And like was collecting donations that maybe could have gone elsewhere. Another witness, Rhonda Miles, testified that she was angry that Maddie took donations away from real victims. Maddie is sentenced to a 10-year suspended sentence and ordered to pay back the $39,000 in restitution plus an over $1,000 fine, which I have to tell you, before her plea deal was ever made, she brought in a check with the money and GoFundMe had already refunded. Before she even plead out, before she even pled out, she had the check reimbursing all of the funds that she got from this. The deal is if she stays out of trouble for 3 years of probation, she'll stay free. The defense tried to get them to expunge her record, to wipe her record clean if she stayed out of trouble. But the judge denied that. He said, frankly, I think there is a good purpose served here by having people with whom you will interact with in the future know that at one time you engaged in this criminal scheme. Serious crimes must have serious consequences to deter both you and others from such crimes in the future. Granting a deferred judgment, in my mind, would have sent the wrong message. Part of what she has to do is she has to complete 100 hours of community service, which, frankly, I hope she serves in some sort of cancer-related service.
I think that's right. I think, like, having to go and see, like, this is what you were pretending. Like, this is what the reality is.
Those who testified in her sentencing hearing agree with that. You should go and see what these people are confronted with. Mm-hmm. Again, everyone who donated to her fundraiser was reimbursed. But think about that. That's money that, yes, was reimbursed, that was stolen from them in a way. But at the same point in time, that money could have been donated to causes that help the fight against pancreatic cancer. Mm-hmm. Maddie is banned from GoFundMe. And so this made me think, it was a kind of a short story. So this made me think of just, I was curious about other TikTok frauds, social media. And we talked in Crime of a Lifetime. We had an amazing conversation with a Munchausen by proxy expert, which was fucking incredible and so fascinating.
Yeah.
And one of the things I loved most about what he said, or the thing that kind of caused me some concern, is that in the age of social media, both Munchausen and Munchausen by proxy, and these type of crimes are much more prevalent because we function under attention, likes, comments, all that stuff. And interestingly enough, too, it also allows for people to be caught. So sometimes doctors who don't want to deny care to a patient will much rather avoid seeing someone. And the way that they'll be able to take it is, or they'll be able to like test if they're being abusive or taking advantage of their child's illness or whatever, is they'll give them some information and then they'll look on their social media and they'll see if they were lying about it. And that's a way that somebody can be caught, which I think is like, so it's interesting. We have tools to catch
that.
It.
Yeah, I remember that.
But we also are in a place where it's becoming much more prevalent.
Mm-hmm.
Like I've seen on social media, like I'll cover it later, but like a mom claiming that her child is sick, but actually but it's just for attention and for money.
Mm-hmm.
So I was going to go through some other TikTok frauds to save us some time and hopefully some headaches, which is there was this user by the name of Slot 7.0 or Slot Machine Queen. And would you believe it? She's a con artist. Her name is Amy Diane Elmore Downs. She's from Athens, Alabama. And she goes on TikTok and she's like, listen, I have a charity that helps domestic violence victims as well as unhoused people, and I have a charity, and listen, if you want to pay, you should pay via PayPal, the Cash App, or Venmo. And she deposits over $1 million into her bank account, all while claiming unemployment since 2020. And what's crazy is it's a million. She gets donations from all around the world. Because all around the world, us Americans are pathetic. So people are like, that poor country, America, they have freedom, but what else? So people from other countries are like, damn, that sucks, America. But she had no legitimate charity, so that's really bad. She's charged. She gets in trouble. Slot Machine Queen gets in trouble. So crazy. Again, Slot 7.0. If someone's name is Slot Machine Queen, I don't know if I'm going to give them money and trust them not to gamble it away. She is charged with 7 counts of first-degree charitable fraud and 3 counts of tax evasion. Because here's the deal. She had a shit ton of money, and I'm sure she wasn't paying tax on it. Then I want to talk about this other thing that has recently happened that reminds me of the case that I covered where the guy found the glitch in the ATM.
Mm-hmm.
So recently on TikTok, there were a bunch of people that brought it to light, which was Chase ATMs. What you could do is you could deposit a check that was fraudulent, that you didn't have enough funds at, but the ATM didn't recognize it. So you could basically withdraw the same amount of money before the check didn't clear and they realized it was a fraudulent check. And so on TikTok, there were people being like, here's a free money hack, guys. and told a shit ton of people on TikTok. And then all these that fucking people stupid. Went to a Chase. It's so stupid because all the Chase has not disclosed how much money they lost doing this. But I can imagine if a bunch of fucking social media people went on and did some crazy shit. Of course, they fucking took advantage. And so now all these people who did this quote unquote hack, which is just another word for fraud. Mm-hmm.
Took out got a cool hack, guys. Go to a bank. Bring a gun. How do you hack a bank? Let me tell you.
Insert, like, what is his name? Randy Roth. I got a great hack. You marry a single mom. You get a life insurance policy. You kill her. You're fine.
I got a sex hack for you guys.
Have it.
You're like, it's just, that's rape. What you're describing is rape. It's not a sex hack.
Just go for it. Oh, Jesus Christ. So in TikTok started this and Chase was like, what the fuck? We're getting all this money stolen from us. So now all the people that have this happened to, their accounts are frozen in negative balance. And I'm sure Chase is just going to fucking go after them because they're a big bank with a lot of money. Anyway, so those are just like a couple of like TikTok frauds that I thought would end with. But I think, I don't know if Maddie, who pretended to have pancreatic cancer, I listened to her statement at the end after she got caught, and I don't know how much longer it could have gone on. Yeah. It happened for a year, and she says she didn't do it for attention. I have a hard time believing that. You said she did
do it for attention.
Well, she says she didn't do it for attention. I think she did it for attention from her family, right. But I also am like, I don't know. You also had a lot of strangers paying you money, so I can't. I don't know if
it was for attention. Why did you need a GoFundMe?
Yeah, if it was for attention, why are you on TikTok telling everybody? If it's not for attention, then what was that for?
Right.
I will say this, and this is a shitty thing to say, but her mugshot, she has a very thick black eyeliner on the top and bottom. It does not look good. I'm not one to comment on looks, but I said that's, and she was very tan all the time, and it made me worried where I said, I don't think that's healthy. If you're fighting cancer, don't go to a tanning booth.
Agree.
Anyway, they don't like commenting on people's appearance, but like it was a lot of black eyeliner, Gwen.
I can picture what you're going to be like old. You're a little Kathy.
No.
I got to be honest.
Shit.
I got to be honest. It was too much eyeliner.
It was too much eyeliner. And she's a pretty girl. She's a pretty girl.
Oh, that's
can
terrible.
I show you it? I want to show you. I want to show you. Okay,
show me a picture. Also, speaking of Lukes, I have two possible Lukes tonight that we have to look at.
Yeah, I got you. What are we doing for dinner? Do you want me to go? I'm going to go grab something. What
I have to think about that. I'm wondering.
I was thinking of getting a rotisserie chicken.
Oh.
I'm so hungry right now.
Get a rotisserie chicken. I'll feed some of it to my kids if you don't mind.
Yeah, not at all. Okay.
Oh, yeah. She's very beautiful, though.
She's beautiful.
She's gorgeous, beautiful, and you're right. It's girl. Too much black around the eyes, but wow, she's a knockout. She'd be so pretty if she just calmed down all the extra.
But right though, like that's too much black.
It's too much. She looks like a raccoon.
Thank you. I really don't like to comment on people's appearance like that.
You're so lucky because you know that I'm a little bit meaner and a little bit tackier. So if you bring it to me, I'm gonna one up you on it, and then you're gonna look like the angel again.
I didn't realize that. I love it. Mm-hmm. I love that. All right. Let's talk about dinner and then let's go and then we'll talk later. Hey, dearest listeners,
great plan, Kim.
Readers, what'd you say?
Great plan. Let's talk about dinner. Then let's go. Then let's talk later. Hey, I'm signing up for the plan. This is an itinerary I can get behind.
I'm so hungry. I need to eat something. Right. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Oh my God. Oh, stop recording.
This podcast is supported by Talkspace.
When my husband came home from his military deployment, readjusting was hard for all of us. Thankfully, I found Talkspace.
Talkspace provides professional support from licensed therapists and psychiatric providers online. Military members, veterans, and their dependents ages 13 and older can get fast access to providers, all from the privacy of their computers or smartphones.
I just answered a few questions online, and Talkspace matched me with a therapist. We meet when it's convenient for me. and I can message her anytime. It was so easy to set up, and they accept TRICARE. Therapy was going so well, my husband and I started seeing a couples therapist through Talkspace, too.
Talkspace works with most major insurers, including TRICARE. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com/military. Go to Talkspace.com/military to get started today. That's Talkspace.com/military.